Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can find me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. I'm joined once again by the great Mike Wall. You can find him on social media and on Twitter at MikeWall68. Mike, it is fantastic to be back chatting with you. I know we missed last week with the bye week, but we have a lot to catch up on today. How the heck have you been, my friend?
All is good. I think it dropped like 10 degrees Celsius over here in Frankfurt. So it's like, it's not shorts wearing time anymore, but I'm still wearing shorts. So I'm going to keep up the good fight, Andy, and always a pleasure talking football with you.
Hey, you've got that Green Bay blood in you, so you can wear shorts until it's, you know, very, very cold. That's at right. This point. You've got the credibility after living in Green Bay for a while, so hopefully that all works out for you. It is great to be back chatting. Like I said, I know we missed last week. I do want to just quickly touch base on, I know it seems like 7 years ago now, but Packers-Lions, just kind of really quick, your takeaways from that game, what went wrong, and how, you know, kind of Detroit just basically handled Green Bay in that game.
Well, I thought the defense did their job. The stats are elusive right now because it was 7 years ago. But yep. I think the Packers held them like 17 points on defense. I mean, they played really well. And you know, as good as the Detroit offense is, and how dynamic it is under Ben Johnson. You know, obviously the weather played a huge part in kind of limiting what they were able to do. I just thought the defense played really well. The offense did not. It's always perplexing when, you know, you lose your best player. They lose Hutchinson. I know they just brought Z Smith in, but he didn't play against us. But they lose Hutchinson, and McNeil's a really good player, and he showed up a couple times because we had to switch people around the offensive line. But it's always perplexing to me when they lose, like, the one person that you have to game plan against that you don't have more success. And I guess the second part of that is we knew going into the game that Detroit was really going to be all about stopping the run. Josh Jacobs, I thought, played really well. And then it's another one of those games where you're like, let's go ahead and follow through with that, boys. We don't need to put the rock up that many times. I think it was 42 times they dropped back in a rainy game. It just made a lot of sense. I don't think that's a good formula for success. That's just, you know, my personal opinion as a former fat guy.
No, and they were running the ball very, very well. Exactly. I'm sure that obviously once you have the pick six, you know, so they're in 2 minute mode, you get the pick six, then they get the ball back and they're still sort of in that like 40 second mode trying to do something. They get the ball back again and they're down, what, 24-3 at that point. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure
it was 10-3. So in the first 20 plays, they get down to where they want to go and they don't finish. Right. Yep. But from play 20 to play, like play 21 to play 42, they ran the ball like six times.
Yeah.
And part of that's the clock and everything, to your point, but it's 10-3 driving in a 2 minute drill when he throws the pick six, which is another, like, you're going, you know, that's, he's had three of those, I think, in his career where you're literally going, that there's no way you just did that. You're way too good a player. That was one of his three. But yeah, sorry for cutting you off. It feels like at 10-3, you know, even if you get down to 17-3, it's like, we can still play ball with these guys because they're not doing a whole lot on offense.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I think it was disappointing that they couldn't continue to run the ball because Josh Jacobs looked like he picked up right where he left off in that Jacksonville game where he was fantastic, started off great against Detroit, and then basically just got taken out of the game by Green Bay because they stopped running the football, which you want to try to make the other team take it out of Josh Jacobs' hands.
And then the Detroit Lions did a good job of adjusting early on. So they, whether it was bringing an extra guy in the box or just how they wanted to play leverage on the outside, they did a good job after the second series of some adjustment. And so you always wonder with the play caller, is that adjustment what they were waiting for in order to start opening up the passing game? Or is that adjustment something that they had to wait on until halftime and it was just one of those coincidences? Because Detroit did adjust, and that's what you would expect them to do. But, you know, you always think you're playing chess, right? And sometimes in those rainy games, you got to play a little bit of checkers.
I'm so glad you brought this up. This is something that I've talked about, which I think sometimes is maybe a little bit of a, and I'll just preface this by saying I'm a huge fan of Matt LaFleur, especially as a play caller, play designer, everything that he does. But if there's one nit that I have to pick every once in a while, it does feel like he lives in a world where he's maybe trying too hard to attack what the opposing defense is doing or what maybe their weakness is, rather than doing what's working well or what's worked well in the past or what your strengths as a team are. And it just, I don't know your thoughts on this. You can totally disagree, obviously, but I just feel like sometimes there are things that are going well for the offense and they could continue to do it or at least try to do it to make the other team stop you first. And sometimes it just feels like he gets a little bit caught up in maybe trying to do what the what he thinks the defense is going to allow him to do or attack those weaknesses, which obviously isn't always the bad thing. It just feels like sometimes they could maybe lean on what they do well a little bit more.
Well, it's hard to, given the talent he has on the offensive side of the football, the youth, the relative inexperience, it's really hard to fault Matt LaFleur, especially this season. Generally speaking, I think everybody I agree with you. And I think everybody falls into that category in some way, shape or form. But it always seems to be you go away from the run. And I think that's the part where everybody goes, we don't have to go away from the run sometimes, especially right. When things seem to be working pretty well. I'd say the difficult part about play calling is, and especially now, you got to remember, like when Mike Holmgren was here or Mike Sherman was here, nobody cared who Tom Brosley was a coordinator when Mike Sherman was here. Nobody even remembers his name. You know, like play callers, it wasn't about that.
Right.
But now it really is about the play caller. I mean, everybody knows who Ben Johnson's a damn near household name now. You know, Kyle Shanahan's a household name. Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay, because they're offensive play callers. And so I think part of that plays into it a little bit more than it used to. I think that's certainly, I do think that's a real thing. That's not just like an old head talking. I think that's a real thing. But again, it's really hard to, you know, like we always said with Brett with throwing picks, it's like, you got to take the good with the bad, man. Like, he's really hard to critique him right now. He's called some good games this year.
No, I totally agree with that too. There's just like a small inkling every now and again. Yeah. I want to go back. You mentioned the offensive line a little bit in this past game. Would love to hear your thoughts on Jordan Morgan's first start. And then, we'll start there. Jordan Morgan's first start and what you kind of saw from him.
Yeah, I think an extension of how he's really played the whole year. He's not a very – let's preface all of this with it's his first season. Most players aren't any of this his first season. But unfortunately for him, he was drafted in the first round instead of some really good players that are on other teams right now. So you have to kind of look at those standards. He's just not a very physical player at this point at the guard position. Not very confident in his footwork, and so it fails him a couple times. You see he gives up some pressures to McNeil, I think, in the third quarter in particular because of that. And look, there's some things that he's going to be able to do well just because he's a good athlete. And I think that's what carries him through right now. But it's always interesting in these situations. If he's a fifth-round pick and the kid from Duke is a Duke, the center, is a fifth-round pick.
Jake Monk, yep.
Yeah, Monk, I wonder if Monk plays center and they just leave everybody else the same. Like, I wonder if all things being equal and you didn't have their draft sheet, you just wonder if maybe Monk just goes in and fills in for center because I think he's more than capable of doing that. And then now you don't lose anything anywhere, although it's probably fair to say that Jenkins is better at any of the three inside positions than any of the other starters.
Yeah, I think that's fair too, which you set up perfectly for my next question, excuse me, and that is Josh Myers, and he was obviously out of this game. They do put Elton at center, a couple issues with snaps here and there. They obviously go with Jordan Morgan at left guard. You go with Sean Ryan at right guard. Is this a potential starting lineup for next year? Josh Myers is a free agent next year. Based on how he's played so far this year, should Green Bay make him a priority? Do they go with a Jacob Monk? They've got a lot of different options who could play center in Green Bay. What do you think could or maybe should be the avenue that Green Bay goes with Josh Myers in the next year as he is a free agent?
Yeah, so I think he's played a lot better.
I do too.
I think he's played a lot. You don't notice him anymore, which is honestly a great compliment from three years ago. And look, there's not very many competent football guards, centers, tackle, offensive linemen in the league. So if you have guys that are competent and you don't have to overcompensate them, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's back because I just think that you don't waste a player as good as Elgin Jenkins is at guard at center. I think that's a step back. As good as he could be at center, given the defense of the three techniques in the league, you want that player to be playing guard if he can actually play guard. I don't think that Jordan Morgan's a guard You know, I'm not sure what he is right now, you know, as of yet, but I don't think he's a guard. And listen, I didn't think I was going to be a guard either, so I can, you know, completely be wrong on this. But, you know, I just think there's some things he needs to work on and improve. If he's going to be, you know, if he gets to stick there and maybe work at it for 2 years, yeah, maybe he could be. But, you know, right off the top of your head, when you kind of watch him move and how he, like the physicality of his game, it kind of looks like a little bit more like a tackle to me.
Sure.
So, and then, you know, Monk, you like what you saw from Monk in the preseason. You love what you see on tape from him. So there's an opportunity there. But, I guess it's a long-winded way of me saying I don't think this is a potential starting group for the team. I mean, obviously it is a potential, but I wouldn't bet on this group because I wouldn't ever move Jenkins off of guard to play center. But I do see them maybe moving away from Josh Myers. If Josh Myers can go get, you know, let's throw out numbers, you know, get $12-13 million from another team, like, you got to go take it. And yep. Then I think they have a really good option waiting in the wings with that Jacob Monk. And I'm pretty bullish on that kid in, you know, sitting for a year, learning the system, being in the weight room. I'm pretty bullish on him being able to play next year.
We're pretty much in the same spot where I do think it comes down to dollars and cents, because I think he's played well enough. He obviously does a lot of the checks at the line and being the guy in the middle of that offensive line that's making the calls. And then obviously having that rapport with Jordan Love, I think those things are important. And again, I think he's played better football this year. But I also think, you know, if you start talking about, well, John Runyon Jr., I know he played guard, but it was around $10 million per year in the offseason. If you look at Lloyd Cushenberry, who went over from Denver to Tennessee, got right around $13 million per year. I think he's probably in that range. I think you probably say, yep, all right, we've got guys in house that maybe could take this on. And I am interested to see what Jacob Monk could do. And they could, again, move some other guys around as well. So my guess is, I think it's a coin flip, but my guess is maybe they let him walk if he gets around that money, but he's a little bit cheaper than that. I could definitely see them wanting to keep him around, because offensive linemen, as you mentioned, are really, really difficult to find.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, it honestly really depends on how well Sean Ryan and or Jordan Morgan play, because if you have two question marks on the line, that's a lot different than having just one. And you know, as good as they think some of these other guys are, that could be a real consideration as well.
It very much could be. I want to get to the trade last week, which, again, you and I have not had the opportunity to talk about. Preston Smith heads to the Steelers for a 7th-round pick. Your thoughts on the trade, how it potentially changes this team? Would you have done it, et cetera? I'll let you go in any direction that you want.
Yeah, I think it sucks. Preston's one of my favorite Packers, has been for the last couple of years. There's a difference in you know, production, you know, or field production and style of play and what I think what he brings to the field. It just doesn't seem like a 7th-round pick is worth what you get out of him, especially when you look who's behind him and the lack of production from everybody else, and knowing that Preston's really good in the run game. He does create pressure. He can push the pocket. When you say something like, well, that means Lucas Van Ness gets more snaps, I think Goody came out and was like, oh, our young guys get more snaps. It's like, well, we've kind of already seen what that looks like. And we're doubling down because he's a 1st-round pick again. If you make all these guys 5th-round picks, do we make these same decisions? I just, in a vacuum, I don't think that's true. I think Preston Smith should be thrilled because he's going into a pretty good situation. Yeah. With he's lining up again, opposite of TJ Watt, and he's going to get a lot of single blocks. So I think, you know, for him, that's great. But especially not being a Packer this week, though, you know, he's probably a little bit pissed off because this would have been a stat stuffer, given the fact that Caleb Williams is in shotgun for the Bears.
Yeah, that's true. He did also miss out on his bye week because Pittsburgh already had their bye week, and then he misses out on Green Bay's. So he gets to play the extra week of the season. So I guess, I don't know if you get, do you get extra compensation for that if you play the extra week in the season?
Listen, I'm sure he knows. Let's put it that way. I'm sure he knows if he does, but I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, I don't know either, but that sucks for him in that regard. But no, I think that is going to be a really good spot for him. Obviously, going back to 3-4, it did change the calculus a little bit to me when I heard that he requested the trade and wanted to be, you know, somewhere else and not, I think, playing in this 4-3 style of defense. So I think that makes it certainly a little bit easier to swallow. Obviously, get some cap savings, but it would feel a lot different if Kingsley Enagbare or LVN or Brenton Cox or Aaron Mosby or one of these guys was, you know, it seemed like they were ready. And it's like, oh yeah, we've got to find a way to get that guy more playing time. Kind of like you're feeling like with Edger and Cooper, it's like, all right, we've got to open up space for that guy. Yeah. Like if it were something like that, I'd be like, yep, totally makes a 1,000,000% sense. But when you don't have that guy, and LVN and Enagbare have not been creating those pressures, and You know, we haven't seen enough from Mosby, and we haven't seen any of Brenton Cox. It's tougher to be like, yeah, this is the 1A perfect deal. But I can at least understand, especially with him requesting the trade, of maybe what they were thinking there.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that he requested the trade. That's interesting. And so I suppose you're happy for him if that's what he's looking for. And obviously, you know, Halfley's looking at this going, we're not getting a lot of pressure on this in this hand. If we're not getting pressure on this hand either, we might as well. We're gonna have to bring extra guys anyways. Yeah. So maybe it's not that big of a loss. I always try to look at it from you have your field play, and then you have the locker room and the meeting room and all that kind of stuff. And again, just for a seventh round pick, I think it's always you look at this compensation, you understand the contracts behind it and the length of the deals that are you know left. But still, man, it's just. You just feel like Preston's one of those guys on your team that come playoff time is going to be one of those guys that makes a big play. And I don't know that I can say that about, you know, the people that are behind him right now.
I think that's a really good point. I do think come playoff time, he probably has a little bit of that extra gear, the experience, the mentality, just like you said, to make a big play here or there. And he's a really good run defender as well. So I do think there's some loss there, and we'll see. Hopefully these younger guys can step up and make it so that it's much ado about nothing, but it's definitely going to be worth monitoring in the second half of the season. Speaking of before we get to the second half, let's just kind of look at this first half of the season as a whole. They're 6-3 right now. They currently are in the number 7 seed. If the playoffs were to start today, they win multiple games with Jordan Love injured. They basically boat race the AFC South and go 4-0 against the South. They're 2-3 against everyone else. How do you evaluate the first half of the season for Green Bay so far?
We made it. Green Bay versus Chicago. Coming off the bye week, one of the best rivalries in all of sports, and Green Bay looking to start the second half of the season strong. Cannot wait for this one. And just like Green Bay is ready to get back in the action, it's also time for you to get back in the action with Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You do not even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Simply put, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off? Which ones aren't? Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Christian Watson to explode versus Chicago, and Chicago to have to settle for a multitude of field goals against this Green Bay defense. The best part is that there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. There's absolutely nothing like seeing a football game live, and that's even more so in Green Bay than in any other city or in any other stadium. I had the absolute best time going to the Houston game earlier this year as my son got to see his first regular season game live, and let me just tell you, it was absolutely perfect. And there's no question about it. The best and easiest way to get tickets is on GameTime. GameTime has a new feature called GameTime Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. When I started using GameTime, it was so easy to use, and GameTime filtered out all the extra garbage to show me just the incredible deals that they had on all the great seats. It was simple, efficient, and unbelievably easy to use. It was also super helpful seeing the seat views before buying. And enough with all the false advertising on pricing. Turn on all-in pricing on GameTime to see the total upfront cost with no surprise fees at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with GameTime. Download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download GameTime today. What time is it? GameTime.
Much improved defensively. Fun to watch defensively. Yeah. I've said it before. I think the number one improvement on this team has been the linebacker room. I think that unit has just grown and developed in spades. I don't know if that's addition by subtraction, by losing Devondre, or obviously bringing in the young fella, or just giving Isaiah McDuffie more time. I just think that group has played well. I think Quay's improved. He's not certainly where maybe the expectations are for him, but he's improved. I really have enjoyed watching just a more aggressive brand of football on the defensive side. I think what's really good about this team and the position they're in is they haven't played very well on offense. And that doesn't mean that we haven't scored points, and that doesn't mean that we haven't run the ball effectively. we were just talking about Matt LaFleur and you know, kind of what he's been able to do. I think that he's been masterful, generally speaking, over these nine games at really creating offense and kind of covering up some people's deficiencies. Josh Jacobs, I think he's second in the league right now in yards after contact. Like, he's, you know, we always talk about making chicken salad, and he has been a very, very pleasant surprise. Even in the games that he hasn't had the effect, it has not been because of him. It's either been because of lack of carries or just a complete ineptitude up front. But these guys have won games where they haven't played very well. And I say that thinking that you're going to be better going into the end of November and December, going into the playoffs, and you're just going to continue to grow because it is a young team and they are kind of still finding out their identity. Tucker Kraft coming out and really kind of being a force in this offense is something that Matt LaFleur probably wasn't, to the extent that he has, probably wasn't planning on early on. So yeah. you kind of take all of that and you go, they could be one of those teams that might, you know, might go into the playoffs feeling like they're ready to peak. And they're certainly putting themselves in a position. I think the hard part is, you know, I haven't looked at the rest of the schedule, but I mean, good Lord, the NFC the North is just, they're really, really good, man. They could end up third in the NFC North and lose a couple more games in this division because it's a really good division.
Yeah, the division is brutal. I called it the group of death the other day, like in a World Cup when you get in the group of death. And certainly, I mean, you have two games left against Chicago, and they're in a really bad spot, which you feel much better about. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. You do have the games against Detroit and Minnesota on the road. As far as the rest of Green Bay's schedule, it's an interesting one. You look at the two Bears games look very winnable. Saints at home looks very winnable. And then Miami at home is an interesting one where it depends on what sort of version of Miami that you get. I think you feel better about that game maybe than you did going into the season. Seattle on the road. Seattle's never an easy place to play.
That's gotta be a tough out.
But, you know, they're not exactly tearing the league up or setting it on fire either. And then you've got, you know, the three really tough games. You've got at Minnesota, you've got at Detroit, and then San Francisco at home. Even if you put Seattle in that one, if you can go 4-0 against the two Bears games, the Saints game and the Dolphins game, if you can find a way to go 4-0 on that, just 2-2 in the other ones, again, Detroit, Minnesota, San Francisco and Seattle, I think you feel pretty good about going 6-2 in the second half. And you know, I don't think you're going to win the division with that, unfortunately, because the division's insane, but I think you feel good about going into the playoffs and where you're at and hopefully getting hot at the right time.
Yeah. And I think they proved last year, it doesn't matter if they have to go on the road in the playoffs. I know we're, you know, it's looking pretty far ahead. 6-2 would be really generous. 6-2 that'd be a really, a really, really good last eight games. I think. I don't know if I was, if I had to bet money on it, I don't know if I'd go that high. But you certainly can talk that out. No question about it. I think they usually are going to split against Detroit. They're usually going to split against Minnesota. And then, you know, the Niners are kind of hot and cold right now. I just watched their tape from the Cardinals last week, and it's, you know, they're not playing good. They're not playing the same brand of football they've been playing the last couple of years. And some of these other teams are, you know, it's funny what's starting to happen. And I guess it's been happening for a while, but the disparity, I feel like there was a much closer bandwidth and talent between good and bad in the National Football League for a couple of years. And I think it's getting wider again. I think some of these teams are really bad.
Really, really bad. We're on the same page. Yeah, there's some atrocious football out there. I'm gonna ask, this is a totally one off. How about your Carolina Panthers with three wins? Like, to me, like, I know they're a really bad team. I'm not joking when I say this. Like, three wins might be three wins above my expectation for that team. That's almost like, I almost want to give credit to the coaching job for the getting three wins. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Panthers?
Well, so the thing that's kind of tough to remember sometimes, I think, with those teams is they've earned the right to have, they actually have a lot of good players. And yeah. Even though they got rid of Hassan Reddick and Burns, like, they still have really good players on their team at all three levels on the defense and you know, all across. They've got a first round draft pick at left tackle. They got a first pick in the draft at quarterback. That they had to bench. They have good running backs. They've had talent over the board. So teams like that, and they're young. It's almost like some of those things are you have to develop that belief and that continuity and that chemistry within the team. But there's also this point where I think the coach can almost screw that up more than anything else when you have these young talented guys. Yeah. And so it's, if you've got a young, because I think that coach is a young fella and is full of, I know he's full of energy. And so if you can just maybe get that owner away from the team and not let him go to the locker room and talk, and then you can just continue to say the right things in front of these guys and make them believers. Like, I've been saying that it's like watching a really bad three technique. Like, if you play hard, you're going to get sacks. You know, like Lucas Van Ness doesn't have a single move, really. I mean, if we're just being, you know, kind of, I haven't seen a single move this year, but he's going to get sacks because he plays his ass off.
Yep.
And those people make up their teams are the same way. You're going to get a couple of victories because other teams people underestimate how hard it is to show up 17 times a year. I know that sounds ridiculous, but people underestimate how tough it is to actually show up and play a good game. It's hard, man.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it one bit. And we see it from teams all the time. So yeah, I'm intrigued by them. They got a really tough rest of the schedule. I don't know that they're going to win many more games. They're still a really bad team.
They'll just keep stockpiling talent, baby.
Yes, they will. It's got to pay off eventually, right? But no, I think the other thing
it's
we like don't
the Detroit talk about, Lions, Andy, you're talking about the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions stockpiled talent for 30 years, and then finally they got a coach who could use it. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's all that happened.
I do think the other thing we don't talk about enough is how bad ownership can just completely suck everything out of a team. And we see that in Carolina. We've seen it in a variety of different spots. I think part of the reason in Chicago is not going great at the moment. As well. So we'll talk about that before we get to Chicago, just really quick too. What are your expectations for this Packers team in the second half of the season? Where do you want to see them be better? And what do you think they can maybe ultimately accomplish?
I don't think they can be, I just don't think they're going to win the division. So getting to the playoffs is a feather in the cap. And I think that's the expectation. I mean, I know they want to win the division, but I think right now the expectation is we're going to get into the playoffs. We're probably not going to get a home game. But I think you need to be rolling in there with confidence. And the big thing that you want to see is you want to see the offensive line shore up as far as they've lost a couple games this year. And I know we can't put it on one thing, or they've lost a couple games because they got beaten in specific spots on the offensive line where it's cost them games because there's big plays to be made. I want to see that shored up. I'd like to see that shored up. And certainly I think just from a consistency standpoint, both the quarterback position, the receiver, like, that relationship you want to continue to develop and maybe see a little more consistency just in the let's play and pitch and catch up on the offensive side. And then defensively, I just think they just got to continue to play the way they're playing. If you play the way that they're playing, calling the game that Halfley's calling, you're just going to continue to develop. And that's what the expectation is. Hopefully, I think the big thing for this team, Andy, is if you go into the playoffs healthy at key positions, with the play callers that they have in place right now, I think you're going to have a lot of success. And I don't know what that means. You know, I look at this NFC right now. I think clearly Detroit's the class of the NFC. And if they get a home, I mean, it's like, if you got to go play in Detroit for the playoffs, that's going to be really tough. I think that's going to be tough for anybody to win, but everybody else, if you just look around the league, like, who do you not feel good about playing against? Really?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Let me ask you this. How much different is a playoff game at home or on the road? Obviously, I know from like a silent count standpoint, if the crowd's really loud, that's going to make a huge impact. But how tangible is the difference between a home and a road game in the playoffs?
It really, I mean, obviously there's the, you know, you stay in a hotel and the food's different and all that. So taking all of that away, really the only difference is if you're playing like the old Metrodome or if Ford Field, if I can promise you if Ford Field's got a playoff game, it's going to be bananas. Yeah. So if you go to a play or Seattle, if you go to Quest, man, like Quest, the way they built Quest is the volume goes up and then comes back down right into literally the center of the field. And if we were in the NFC Championship in Carolina, I swear to God, I didn't hear a snap count one time. You have no idea what's going on. And so those places really affect the communication, the ability to get off. And obviously when you get into that situation, especially playing offensive line, you're trying to make checks and calls and all this stuff, like, you don't know which way is up, man. That is really difficult. But most of these places you go and play, even in Lambeau, Lambeau's a great place, and maybe it's gotten louder because of the additions. But even back in the day, it's not what you call a really loud stadium. It's a great stadium. It's got a great tradition and great fan base. But just the acoustics of it weren't that bad for the opposing team. But some of these places are terrible, and they get even louder in playoffs.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine that. And that's obviously why you want to avoid some of those really tough road places to play in. All right, Packers, Bears. Let's start with the Bears. It's not pretty. It's really, really ugly right now. Things have gone very, very wrong for Chicago. I don't know. Where do you want to even start with Chicago?
Well, when did they fire their last OC? Like, how long ago was that?
Not that long ago, right? Because obviously they have a new one this year. So it was, well, it was Getsy. So when did they fire?
Yeah, it wasn't in like March or something like that.
It was. I can look it up right now.
Well, so you have this guy. This guy last
January 10th.
This is what. Yeah, I should have said. Of course, it's in January. What am I thinking? But you just start going. Okay, let's think about Eberflus gets this job. And you know they bring in Getsy. Okay, you're kind of rooting for him. Obviously, not working out. They had a chance to get Cliff Kingsbury, who's killing it in Washington with Jaden Daniels. And this is the relationship with Caleb Williams. I mean, this makes total sense. And they don't get him. They bring in Shane Waldron.
Yep.
No relationship, not a ton of experience there to as compared to Kingsbury. And now they bring in Thomas Brown. I feel bad for Thomas Brown, to be fair. I mean, if you're just calling it a spade, like Thomas Brown's getting hosed everywhere he goes. He was a rising star. He goes to Carolina. Frank Reich is just, you know, remember he gets fired and he gets hired like 4 months later, just a complete, you know, shit show. And then he gives Thomas Brown the reins for 3 weeks. And takes them back because he wants to sink his own battleship. So he gets kind of put on the do not disturb list, goes over to Chicago. Now he's going to get this job. He's the passing coordinator. It's like, well, that's not a good position to come from right now, given the fact their passing game's awful. So I just don't know. You look at this game and Caleb Williams, if you watch Caleb Williams at USC, none of what's happening surprises you in the least bit. I mean, you know, that this is kind of how he played. He a lot of freestyling, holding the ball, being able to be elusive in the pocket and create extra time. But it's amazing to me sometimes with coaching staffs. I'm watching this last game. And, I mean, I think they get a 9 sack? I mean, some ridiculous number, 9 sack. Yeah, okay. Which is like, that's not even a real number.
It's a video game,
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's like playing Tecmo Bowl. So, but you watch the game and they're missing 3 offensive starters on the line, including that the big right tackle.
Yeah.
Okay. The two guys on the left side, they can't pick up a pass protection. They can't pick up a stunt. They can't pick up a pressure and they're sliding the center away from them. I mean, it's like, they're not doing anything that makes sense and they're not running receivers on. There's no receiver that is open earlier than 10 to 12 yards. So it's like, what's the game plan to beat Chicago? Oh, I don't know. Just make sure he can't throw fades because they don't throw any quick passes. It's absolutely mesmerizing to watch, knowing that the guy just got fired. It's like watching a car accident in slow motion. It's unbelievable. So that was a lot, but man, sometimes when these guys get fired, you feel bad for because it's their families and this and that. That's so much time they put in. But you watch this tape, you're like, come on, man. Like, you got to be smarter than that. That didn't make any sense.
The other thing that's amazing to me, you mentioned it with Caleb Williams. You knew this was not going to be somebody where you plugged him in and he's all of a sudden just going to be a game manager and getting the ball out of his hands and throwing quick passes, right? So to ignore the offensive line to the extent that they ignored the offensive line and just really not making the upgrades there and putting so much money into DeAndre Swift, Gerald Everett, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, like they go out and weapon, and they grab a project third round offensive tackle who is never supposed to be ready this year and not a whole heck of a lot else. What Shelton, I think they brought over. And I think they made another trade for Ryan Bates. They traded over from Buffalo, but like no real incremental.
Johnny No Name.
Yeah. What's that?
I said Johnny No Name. You know what I
mean? Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So to me, like not doing that.
Their skill guys are incredible. I don't know who's, and obviously there's an ownership conversation about Chicago that we don't even care to get into.
Right.
But you talk about Ryan Poles and you talk about Eberflus and you go, okay, so the question was, how are we going to make Caleb Williams successful knowing that he has to be the day one starter? And your answer was not, and you know you have a terrible offensive line, and you drafted a good right tackle.
Yep.
Your left tackle is a fifth round pick who was never, you know, it was always going to be kind of a marginal guy.
Yep.
You have nobody inside that's any good, And your answer was to just go beef up the skill positions and just say, oh, he'll just be able to get rid of the ball, knowing that he's not that kind of guy. I mean, it's almost like, I think there's so many people on the planet that could read that script and go, oh, this is going to be a disaster. And they still do it. It's amazing.
It really is. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And it sucks from an NFL standpoint because maybe Caleb just struggles everywhere. Who knows? It's tough to say, but he's a super talented kid, and you can see why he was number one overall pick, and we'll have conversations forever of whether it should have been Jaden Daniels probably eventually and things like that. But like, he's super talented. And if this just ends up being who he is, and I think the question will always remain is it because he went to Chicago, or would that always been the case no matter what?
Yeah.
And from an NFL standpoint, you want these super talented players to end up being successful. And we've seen it enough with these high end quarterbacks that maybe get thrown into a position where they're not ready for. Or we saw it, Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, who now are playing better, Geno Smith. And sometimes it just takes a change of scenery and a little bit of time. But man, it makes me appreciate even more how Green Bay has handled their quarterback situation over the last three decades.
Well, no doubt. But I don't think Caleb Williams would be playing this way if he was with Matt LaFleur. I don't think there's a chance in hell.
No,
yeah, I mean, so
look at what they did with Malik Willis. If you could do that with Malik Willis, just imagine what you can do. Like, at worst, you could do that with Caleb Williams, right? At worst.
We were just talking about you brought up Matt before and saying, okay, is there sometimes that we were too rigid about how we want to go about our business? Broadly speaking, this is the problem with the NFL.
Yeah.
They are trying to fit a square peg into a round hole because that's what this coordinator knows, instead of adopting, the Greg Roman, Lamar Jackson, which, was, I guess, inevitably or it's at one point a failed experiment because they moved him onto the Chargers where he's doing really well. But, you say, oh, I've got this unique once in a generation athlete. Let me build the offense around him instead of vice versa. And you have the first pick in the draft and the creativity. To have an offense that's so lacking in creativity, it just goes to show you, I say this all the time, man, like there are some amazing high school football coaches out there that can coach circles around some of these guys.
Yep.
And it's such a great league, and it's so much fun to watch, but dear Lord, the amount of the good old boys club still rings true, man. Cause it just doesn't make any sense.
It does not. And at least it's happening in Chicago and not happening in Green Bay. And as we talk about this game this week, what are you looking for? Packers, Bears, and how can Green Bay just step on the neck and not give Chicago any hope in this one?
So, yeah, I just wrote some couple things down from my show. There's really two things I think, one on offense, one on defense. And obviously, offensively, look, the way that Jordan Love has been playing, and the way that the Chicago, like Matt Eberflus's shell defense is just vanilla cover two. And when they drop down, it is very obvious. Like, it's very obvious they're going to go single safety or not, especially when you motion. If you motion across the football, you're going to know exactly what they're doing, especially if you get the play out in time to kind of give yourself 15 seconds before the ball needs to be snapped. You can kind of diagnose what they're going to do. So, I go into this a little more detail, but essentially – they could start every first down play with a run pass option. I mean, with a run with a tag or a pass with a tag.
Right.
And put him under center, base everything you're going to do around Josh Jacobs and force them to go to a single safety. Because when they go to a single safety, they are very susceptible to getting beat. There's a lot of middle routes that are wide ass open. If you're talking about deep crossers and whatnot. So I think that's a great game plan. That really helps Jordan Love kind of get into the game and make the throws that he's A, really good at, and B, really loves to throw. It gives him a chance to get downfield a little bit more. And then defensively, listen, their game plan is pretty easy. Left side of the line can't block. And Caleb Williams is holding on to the ball. So put yourself in situations where they can't make five-yard throws. They have to make 15 to 20-yard throws and tee off.
Yeah.
And if you got to run stunts, if you got to bring an extra man, one thing that New England did really well is – they overloaded. Like, I don't know what tips and tells they picked up on their offense, but partly because Caleb Williams is such a young player and partly because of the coordinator, a lot of times they would motion across and nobody would move on New England because they already knew what the play was. And so they were overloading sides. They had such a numerical advantage so many times, whether it was the run game or the pass game, that if we can recreate any part of that with the talent that we have on defense, I think it could be a long day again in the backfield for Caleb Williams and company.
All right, last question I have for you before we get you out of here. How much difference can an offensive coordinator make in 1 week? How much does that, the firing of one coordinator going to another, me, based on what I saw last week from Chicago, it's like, I don't know what offensive mind could potentially save it in 1 week, but how much of a difference could that potentially make?
Well, so here's one thing that could be really easy for them to improve on. When get the plays in faster and give him a tag, because what's happening a lot right now is they get the play in, they run a motion. Let's say they're just running belly left. They'll go 2x2. They'll motion the slot across, and literally nobody moves because where that ball is being hiked, where he's at on the field relative to the center, it is obvious that he has no part of the play. And so just shoring up the details of, like, I'm snapping the ball when he could be in an advantageous position to, like, belly out the backside defensive end or run a flat route or, you know, all these, like, just those little, just shoring up that, just making sure that those are right will dramatically improve the performance of that team. The question is, are they looking at that or are they going in, hey, we got to do something different, get these guys excited, instead of just saying, why don't we just get better doing the details of what we're doing already and it'll be a lot easier. I think they're probably doing the former because they want to shake it up instead of the latter.
Hopefully. Well, I mean, what you're saying, you're hopefully they doing it the right way, looking at the details or not looking at the details.
No, I'm guessing that they're going in and they're saying, hey guys, you know, we're going to run this. We're going to open this thing up. We're going to do this. We're going to, you know, we're going to make quick blah, 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 blah. Instead of just going, hey, we're just going to snap the ball when the defense doesn't know what the hell's going on. And
yeah,
for whatever reason, teams just don't do that. I don't know.
No, they do not. And I have a feeling that in a short week and coming off of this, they just cut Nate Davis, their guard, as we were recording this as well. So,
it sucks, man. That sucks.
It's a fun situation in Chicago right now. I'm just hoping Green Bay does not give them any sort of reason for hope as they enter into the second half of that game and Green Bay just goes in and takes care of business. Mike, I know you always take care of business. I cannot thank you enough for coming on every week. Always enjoy these conversations. If ever the podcast shuts down, I'm not going to tell you, and I'm just going to pretend that I'm still doing a podcast just so we can have these conversations anyway. But tell us all where we can find all of your incredible work.
Yeah, just check out Bach Party on YouTube. It's on our Process to Perform channel. I try about two shows a week. And Andy, I love talking to you, talking ball with you. And the Green Bay fan group is fantastic. So this is always fun for me.
Nothing but the best. I cannot thank you enough. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at MikeWall68. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Mike and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.